First Baptist Church of Redmond, February 20th, 2022. Guest speaker, Patrick Noury. The Dark Side of Microbes.
I'll tell you, you know, this is what, it's a good introduction to what we're going to talk about today. This is what microbes do to life. They interfere with what God has done. Let's see now if I can. There we go. We've been so educated and so brainwashed with an evolutionary view of life that we, you know, do one thing at a time. I can't talk and do the other thing too. But we've been so brainwashed with an evolutionary view of life and our existence, our origin, that we begin to adopt a view that's just, it's not healthy. And so one of the big questions that's asked of Christians, if God is such a good God, why does he allow stuff like sickness and death and things to prevail, creation, this stuff that doesn't make sense? Why would you have people die for no reason? Why? It just seems so unjust. And I think it's related, frankly, to the same issue that we're experiencing with why microbes and where did they come from. One of the things I've had to reevaluate in my life over the last few years here, a couple of years, seems like an eternity, doesn't it, with what's happened? It has so crippled our culture that I've personally been challenged to rethink my whole life. And, you know, I'm in one of those classes, in addition to thinking, worrying about getting sick, you're also now put into a class where you are such at risk, you're going to die the next day. And that's the class I'm in, you see. Not only do I have health impairments, but I'm of the age that now I'm over the hill. And once the microbes get a hold of you, bud, you're finished. You know, that's the feeling you're left with. And so I've had to reevaluate, what am I doing? And thinking about this, is my thinking correct? Do I really have a right view of things? And that's where I think, when especially this idea of fear, it has so crippled our culture the last few years and so preoccupied us. I've noticed the changes, even when I go to the store just to do, you know, typical errands that we do. And it was pleasant to be able to see somebody, say hi to them, smile, and so on. I mean, you can't smile anymore. That covers it up. You can't tell what people are doing, what people are thinking, what's going on with their face. The face is such a, it is such a tremendous asset to us when we communicate. We can see how much is missing. But we ignore people, or I found people when I'm walking this way, they'll do a beeline around me. Not because they have anything personal, but because they've been so crippled by fear that they're worried about what I might give them. And I think we've all probably been there. And, you know, this idea of the viruses, it's such an unknown world, isn't it? Anybody have a clue as to what a virus is? By the way, how many microbes did you come up with on your hand here? Scientists tell us that there are over 14 trillion microbes of one kind or another that live on us and in us. And I often tell the kids I teach in my classes, you know, if you think about your hands, if you could see, like microscopes reveal to us and so on, if you could see all the bacteria, all of the microbes that are on your hand, it'd look like New York City. That it'd be just a vast, vast amount of activity going on. And we live in the midst of this. And so to try to make some sense of that, how does it fit within the plan of God? How does this fit with our origin? Or have these things actually evolved and are now just bothering us? So one of the biggest things that we don't know it, but we're afraid of, are these things called viruses. These are pictures. One of them is the COVID-19 virus on the right. And the one on the left is actually, it's a reproduction of what they actually observe, the electron microscopes of what this thing looks like. Isn't this a hideous thing? I mean, it looks like something out of Star Wars. And it is a very dangerous thing. Why would God allow something like that to invade us and cause death and destruction and disease and so on? Here are some of the things that viruses have caused. In fact, these are viruses. The flu, common ordinary flu, you get all its variations. No way to combat it. This the information on with the flu that keeps getting transferred and transmitted every year changes constantly. COVID, hepatitis, rabies is a virus. HIV is a virus. Polio. I don't know if some of you might be old enough to remember the big scare. When my mother passed away, I went through a lot of things in her desk and stuff, and I was born in 1951, and I ran across an insurance policy my mother took out on me right after I was born. It was exclusively a polio insurance policy, and it would pay so much benefit. They were scared to death. I grew up with a couple of people in my classes that had polio. One was one of my science teachers. His arm was shriveled because of polio. Another one was a girl that I've ultimately graduated with, had to disappear for a year, had to go to a special medical institution because one of her legs was shrunken by the polio. And back then, you see, we didn't drink the polio stuff. You got it with these needles that were about this long. And, you know, you could see the needle in it. And I goes, oh, man. And we'd line up in the school, and they'd give their injection. You can tell the kids, they're all breaking out in sweats. And I mean, it's a horrendous time. But there was it was a scare. And I still have this little polio policy put out by Continental Insurance Company. It was in the amount of $1,000. Now, back then, of course, that was a lot of money. But they were scared of this thing. And it probably didn't grip our society like the COVID has done today. I think, frankly, that kind of fear has kind of been self-induced, I think. But anyway, Ebola, that's been a big one. And viruses have been found now, too, to influence the growth of cancers. So this is really a strange thing. And you wonder, boy, why is it here? Let me show you a different time that's actually going to take place in our history. Now, we might be here, we might not. We'll be here in one form or another because this happens after the millennium, the thousand-year reign of Christ. But let me just show you what it's going to be like, and it very much relates to what we're experiencing today. It's a different time, and this is in Revelation 21, so we're closing out history. And it says, "And I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth passed away, and they shall be his people, and God shall dwell among them." That's us, people who have believed in him. Now notice the first thing that he is going to do when this heaven and earth is established. He brings the new city down, and his people are going to dwell with him forever. Now here's the first thing that he will do. "And he shall wipe away every tear from their eyes, and there shall no longer be any death. There shall no longer be any mourning or crying or pain. The first things have passed away. And so this is what we're relating to here, is what we're going through right now. These things that we're experiencing are part of something else that happened. God is going to take care of it ultimately in the future. That is the hope of a Christian, by the way. So let's look at the first heaven and the first earth. In the beginning, God created the space and the earth, and God saw that all that he had made, and this is closing out the whole creation week, and behold, it was very good, all except viruses and bad bacteria, and we go on. No, what he saw, what he created was very, very good, and there was evening and there was morning the sixth day. Now, that is the conclusion of the initial creation. Something happened, though, it's obvious. Something happened, because the contrast between what I read here and what I read in Revelation 21, the contrast is enormous. Here, very good. And in Revelation, he shall wipe away every tear. There shall no longer be any death. Something happened between the first creation and the closing out of earth history. What happened that would bring on the stuff that we're experiencing? Obviously, viruses produce death, sickness, decay. Where did they come from? Now, if you study evolution, this guy here taught us that cycles of life, death, disease, sorrow, and injustices were a normal part of living and the evolutionary process. Darwin had concluded after the death of his daughter, which is a horrendous thing. There is no question about that. After the death of his daughter, he concluded that either there was no God or it really did not matter. And then he starts crafting his own God, which was a God of evolutionary processes, of which death, destruction, corruption, decay, and injustice was a normal part of the process. And what it began to do, and it's hung on to us ever since, 200 and some odd years ago, it's hung on ever since. This kind of view of life brings on a sense of fear that you're incapable of overcoming it. You have no control. If this is true here, you have no control over this. And you have no hope. You're part of a machine that will change in time, and it's just a roll of the dice who is going to get hit next. And if you die a horrible death, that's your lot in the evolutionary process. This is the kind of hope he left us. And we're caught in the middle of it. And today, Christian and non-Christian alike are afraid. They're scared to death of what is coming next. In fact, we are so scared that we are willing to give over who knows what rights or what we think is important to us in order to conquer this thing. And one of the first things we should have as a believer is to realize that we cannot conquer this. That's impossible to conquer it. The verse that we read out of Hebrews, the only one who's going to conquer death in the long run will be Jesus Christ. He's the only one who overcame the person who is causing a lot of this trouble that we see. One of the first visible casualties of the fall, I think we all know what the fall was. It was when Adam and Eve made that fateful decision to rebel against the command of God. We experience this every day of our lives. We go through this. Those of us who raise kids, we were a product of it. We rebelled against our parents and to some degree or another reap the consequences. And we go through it with our kids. The story is repeated again and again and again because it's a part of the consequence of the fall. The first visible casualty of the fall was an introduction of fear into the creation. There was no fear before this point. And here it is. And they heard the sound of the Lord God walking in the garden in the cool of the day. And the man and his wife hid themselves from the presence of the Lord God. Now, why would they do that? Why would they hide the God who created everything, pronounced it very good? Everything was in perfect order. It was all working seamlessly. Everything that he had instituted was right in play. Everything was working according to plan. And then all of a sudden, he hides himself from God, he and Eve. And God said, "Where are you?" And Adam said, "I heard the sound of thee in the garden, and I was afraid." That is the thing we've been wrestling with, isn't it? Fear is part and parcel of what we've inherited through sin, through the whole concept of the fall of God, or the falling away of God. At that point, the point they chose to rebel against God, everything began to corrupt and continues in corruption and has lost control, including all of the biology that we see. It's all in a state of corruption and continuing to be corrupted. And it will not change until Revelation 21, when the old heaven and the earth pass away. God gets rid of them, and then he'll wipe away all tears. Now, from between now and then, of course, to some extent, we all are reaping the consequence, whether it's through personal choices or just the general nature of sin. It's not just the acts that we do or the things that we think about, but it's a corrupting principle, and it is actively destroying and corrupting everything in us, around us, in our relationships, in our world, in countries. And it's just wreaking havoc in our world today. And here's a passage of scripture that I think is worth considering. I'm going to read it here. It's worth considering in light of everything that we're going through, but it also poses a question. "He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say to the Lord, my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. I will never get COVID." That is not what he said. "He will cover you with his pinions, and under his wings you may seek refuge. His faithfulness is a shield and bulwark. You will not be afraid of the terror by night, or of the arrow that flies by day, or the pestilence that stalks in darkness, or the destruction that lays waste at noon." Isn't this interesting? This was written, you know, a few thousand years ago. There's no author attributed to it. It's not one of the Psalms of David. Could be one of the Psalms of Moses. But there's no author attributed to it. It's just there. And it seems like it's one of these ubiquitous scriptural passages that most of our believing fathers trusted in and relied on. And it's a challenge for us. Now, here's the question. Why should we not be afraid? We have no control over this stuff. None of us knows whether we're going to get COVID, 1, 2, 3. We just read today the Queen has COVID for a second time. If there's anybody that was well taken care of, or that is being well taken care of and provided for and guarded over and poked with needles and everything else to keep her well and fit, it's the Queen. If the Queen can get COVID, I sure can get it. And you might say, well, yeah, just because you get it doesn't mean you're going to die. Well, no, that's true. That's true. And again, that's the unknown, isn't it? And the fact that the Queen has had it now twice, shows that, well, you know, you may not die the first time around. But we've seen a lot of other things that viruses cause. They are pernicious, and they're there working to destroy the good things that God has created. Now, our verse in Hebrews says that Jesus died that through death he might render powerless him who had the power of death, that is, the devil, and might deliver those who through fear of death were subject to slavery all their lives. Now, this isn't just the point of death. When we read the scriptures, people were afraid of everything. We're afraid of everything. My wife often jokes with me about my particular penchant for worrying about all kinds of things. She calls me Eeyore. And, you know, that's right. You know, if it's sunny out, I'll say, yeah, well, the clouds are going to roll in later on today. Well, boy, it's sure nice. Yeah, but it's going to get hot here in a few weeks. You know, it's just, you're always thinking of the opposite. And I think all of us are like that to one degree or another. I just happen to be more that way. I have to battle it all the time. But fear, we're worried about what the stock market is going to do to us, or about what, you know, recession is going to do to us, or inflation. And we're just constantly caught up with things. And that passage back in the Psalms, let me go back to that. Here's that: he who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. It doesn't mean you're going to be exempt from a lot of the catastrophes that come about because we live in a fallen world. It does mean that there is a sense of overcoming it, that the world cannot know. Only those who trust in the Lord and rely on Him can expect His help, can expect it's a right perspective at a needed time. Whatever it is, God will take care of us and provide for us. He will cover you with His pinions, and His wings you may seek refuge. His faithfulness, and this is the key, is a shield and bulwark. One of the things I've thought about is, okay, what happens if I get COVID? I'm going to the hospital, and I'm going to die. Well, maybe one of the encouraging things that we can think about is to realize that, well, I am going to be in heaven. Now, that's a hope that only believers have. And those are the things we need to cleave to. We need to just cling on to. That we're attacked by a lot of things. But I keep coming back to this. His faithfulness is a shield and a bulwark. You will not be afraid of the terror by night. Look at this. Or the pestilence that stalks in the darkness. I mean, they had pestilence back then. They had viruses were in existence back then. They may not have labeled them as such, but they were certainly there. So why should we not be afraid? We don't have any control over it personally. That's one of the first things you can realize as a fallen human being. You have no control over all of this stuff that's going on. And it's going to get worse. As we approach the time of the tribulation, Jesus promised, this time is going to be so filled with trouble. And it's a general world. It doesn't just mean persecution. It means trouble of all kinds. It's going to be so filled with trouble that there will not have been any time like it since creation or up until that point. It's the worst time in earth history. We are approaching, we're moving toward that time. And Jesus died, it says, that through death he might render powerless. And the fear of death involves all the panoply of fears. It's not just that one point that's out here at some point and you start planning for your funeral, you know, this kind of thing. It's not just that. I mean, that terminates a lot. And I think for people would think about dying, I think a little bit more, it might even lead a lot more people to Christ. But we try to get rid of it, don't we? We try to push it away. We try to try not to think about it. Now, through fear of death, so through fear of the unknown, fear of what could happen to me and all the possibilities, we're subject to slavery. Isn't that an interesting word? Subject to slavery all their lives. And I've, in these last couple of years, I just don't want to live that way. I don't want to be subject to slavery. You live, you trust in God, and you work for His cause, and then in the end, He takes care of us. And He may take care of us. I mean, I haven't had COVID up till now. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to. But it does mean I can take a different perspective on life. So here are some of these unknown things. What are microbes? I told you to look at your hand to count how many there are. And yes, there are billions of them. And it does, I mean, it would look very, very interesting. The closest I could get to it where the kids can appreciate it is you get a little piece, a little scoop of pond water. Kids, did you guys ever do this? You get a tablespoon of pond water and you put it in a microscope slide. They have these concave microscope slides, and put it under the microscope, and you'd be surprised what you see moving around in that water. The water looks perfectly normal, but moving around in that water are little microbes moving around. And it's very interesting just to watch and see what's going on. It's a hidden world to our eyes, but it's a very necessary world. Microbes are a necessity for our planet. Did you know that God created them? Now, they're not listed under the, like you start on day three of creation with plants, you know, and trees bearing seed and fruits and so on. You don't see them anywhere as specifically listed. I think it's interesting that up until the 1800s, most scientists considered what they knew about microbes fit under plants. In fact, they've been jockeying around these divisions of life ever since then. No one has really nailed it down. The Linnaean system of classification that you and I were brought up with, they're jettisoning that. They're reorganizing life again. In fact, as late as the 1970s, another major shift in how they view life and the organization of life. They're still not sure of it. No one has really put the final word on it. And so these things, though, do exist. Microbes, actually, let me just look at this here. They were created by God, and I call it, this is my description, as janitors and the caretakers of our earth. If you see what these microbes do, in some way or another, they're promoting, most of them promote health and the welfare of animals, plants, and man. They're ubiquitous creatures. They're in the Arctic, they're in the Antarctic, and they're in hot environments. If you go to Yellowstone, you'll see bacteria that live in 190-degree temperatures. They're everywhere. They're on your skin. They're in your gut. Someone once said that most of what you excrete is bacteria. That's a pleasant thought, isn't it? They're busy at work, though, taking care of you, and we don't see it, but they serve us. And in fact, there's Psalms that say that God has created that all His creation in some way serves, and it's true. Bacteria and the various microbes all serve. Microbes include both living and non-living things. Now, this is where we begin to approach the viruses. The living things include a wide variety here. If you list them, you've got the various bacteria. These are one-celled living organisms that carry information and directions. They're responsible, really, for keeping you going. You didn't know that, did you? I mean, biologically, they're really at work helping you to digest, manufacturing vitamin B that you need, vitamin B12, vitamin K. They are at work working with other bacteria to cause things to work right. Without bacteria, plants or animals would not be able to eat plants. There's a particular bacteria that actually convert nitrogen make it usable to plants. Bacteria help you digest things like lettuce and celery. So you could go on and on and on and on and on. And these are the things that I believe God has created to help us and help us survive and help us stay healthy. So bacteria are microbes. Fungi are microbes. Those are living organisms that produce spores that decompose organic matter. Protists, these are one-celled living organisms that include the algae. They produce about 70% of the oxygen in the earth. Now tell me those are not needed things. You and I only produce one thing in respiration, and that's carbon dioxide, which you can see where that's going. I mean, the whole thing with global warming is there's too much carbon dioxide. So those of you that are at high risk, check out. We could use less of your carbon dioxide. You know, when you go into Yellowstone Park, another big concern on the part of scientists when it gets to global warming is methane gas. You've heard of that nasty methane. You know, without methane gas, we'd freeze to death. Methane gas actually is what's responsible for keeping the warmth going in our around our globe. And yet, you know, we've got to somehow regulate that stuff and keep it from being produced. And yet, here you got the National Park Service that now is keeping alive 5,000 buffalo in the park. Can you imagine the amount of methane gas they produce? They produce tons of it. And it's kind of like, whoa, there's something wrong here with this picture. But protists, very, very important. Now, viruses are also considered microbes, but they're non-living. Not interesting. These are scary, scary things. Non-living bits of DNA or RNA, and if you know anything about those, are just it's what carries the information about who you are and how you're gonna function as a human being. Heredity depends on it. And here's what viruses do: they invade cells and program them to replicate more of the same. Viruses are pernicious, and they're evil. I call them evil, but, you know, not being responsible for what they do. They're not real people. But if there's ever a culprit that is screwing up our whole existence here, they're viruses. Now, the majority of bacteria are good and benefit God's creation. They fight disease, promote health, and in general, protect us. Fungi, same way, consist of mushrooms, molds, lichens, and yeast. If you pick up a rock, if you're out hiking around, you pick up a rock and it looks like, you know, colorful little almost flowers on it, or moss, you might call it. This lichen, it's helping to break down things in the world. Fungi benefit God's creation by providing food, making antibiotics, vitamins, and decomposing dead things. You know, if nothing was decomposing the dead stuff around us, I mean, we'd be in bad, bad, bad shape. We can't do it. We just throw it in the garbage heap and let the garbage people try to figure it out. But the bacteria are actively working. So are the fungi. So are the protists in the water. They're actively working and eliminating the stuff. Seaweeds and algae form the protists. They benefit God's creation in the sea, by providing food, oxygen, decomposing dead things, and cleaning the water. See why I called them the janitors of God's creation? They're keeping this whole thing clean. Those of you who have fish tanks, any of you have fish tanks at home you keep fish in, you have to keep responsible? What happens if you don't clean it? Fish will ultimately die. And it robs the oxygen in the water. You get too much. The algae begin to help, and then they multiply. And consequently, the fish just choke to death, and they all die. But an important part of life is cleaning. Never could get that one through to my kids or something. Oh, not going to do it, Dad. Not going to do it. And that brings us to this thing we call pathogens. Pathogens are disease-causing agents, like a bacteria, a virus, or a parasite. Okay, so you said God created bacteria for our welfare. Well, I'd like to see that some bacteria, anything, of course, that causes diseases, but I'd like to see it as good bacteria that's gone bad. It's essentially what's happened. Most bacteria are good. There's these little guys in there that are bad bacteria. Where did they come from? How did they get there? Why do they keep living there? What's going on? And then you have, in the way of pathogens, you got these guys called viruses. They're nothing but parasites. They're non-living entities that carry partial DNA, just strands of DNA. There's no real plan to it. It's kind of like you were carrying a piece of machinery around with you all the time. Every once in a while, you throw it into the works, and you jam up whatever you throw it into. You know, you jam it up. That's what viruses do. Its one aim is to find a host that will copy its information again and again. And there are some real spiritual principles to this. I'll show you that here in a little bit, but. Have you ever seen how a virus invades a bacteria? So bacteria normally have a cell wall that keeps things out of it. But these viruses attach themselves. They can't get into the bacteria in the normal way. So what they do is they inject into the bacteria. So it's like a needle in your arm. They inject it into the bacteria, this piece of DNA. And it works, the way it works is very pernicious. Actually, you think of it in terms of human terms here. It deceives the bacteria into thinking that it needs to produce this stuff. And so once it gets in there, the bacteria, some of it, of course, never breaks out. But when it does, now you've got some serious problems. But it begins incorporating it into everything else. And the DNA and the RNA, they're putting it together, reading it, and they incorporate it. And here's what happens. When God created us, he gave us DNA that worked efficiently, 100%, good, very good. And now, when we have viruses and pathogens that get in the way, they actually break the DNA so that it doesn't work properly. And consequently, it corrupts the original. That's what's been going on ever since the fall. Things have begun to corrupt and decay. And of course, viruses, they come and they go. They're, you know, things, sicknesses change, disease change. They, you know, most of them remain around. We've been successful with a few of eradicating some of these, but they find ways to carry this stuff. Some people would say, well, isn't this evolution? No, it's not. Evolution is developing new kinds of beings that actually work. What these things do, including the bad bacteria, they always contribute to the loss and the destruction in the end. Always. They never improve. They always contribute loss. So in the scripture, you read this. There's a parable that Jesus told people who are asking him about the kingdom of God. He says, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a man who sowed good seed in his field. But while men were sleeping, his enemy came and sowed tares also among the wheat and went away. But when the wheat sprang up and bore grain, then the tares became evident also. You see the link there? Now, obviously, this is talking about today, even with what's happening spiritually among us. But there's some real physical applications here. And the slaves of the landowner came and said to him, "Sir, did you not sow good seed in the field? How then does it have tares?" That's a good question we should ask, isn't it? Why did we get these things that grow up now with the wheat? And why does this happen in our own biological structures? And notice the response of the owner. And he said to them, "An enemy has done this." An enemy has done this, not God. That's the answer to the question. That was the answer that Darwin should have come up with. Why do we have injustice? Why did my daughter die? But actually, the blame goes right back to the enemies of God. That's who brought the problem into existence. Man brought it in, and we continue to perpetuate it. You see it repeated day after day after day. And now we're getting ready. Now we got a new fear on the horizon, World War III. So it just never stops. But who's perpetuating it? It's man that's perpetuating it. Bacteria are an important part of the nutrient cycles that all life depends on. You see the plan of God there. That's what he initially has done. And with the phrase, "an enemy has done this," let me show you what happens spiritually with us. Paul is talking to Timothy here, and he reminds him that approach him a certain way, talk to him a certain way, and then he says that they may come to their senses and escape from the snare of the devil, having been held captive by him to do his will. That is a perfect description of a virus. That's exactly what a virus does. It gets a bacteria to do what it wants it to do, actually enslaves it. And this is, of course, the struggle and the battle that we face, isn't it, every day. This is why we walk by faith. This is why we trust in God and his faithfulness. Because it's easy. We're not powerful enough to overthrow the devil. We're not powerful enough to combat him in our own strength. We must rely on God, because the devil can perniciously get in and actually take you captive. Isn't that an interesting thing? Take you captive to do his will. And this is true throughout history. There have been examples of believers who have done things. You look at it in history and you, why on earth would they have ever done that? Well, how could they ever think that way? And an enemy has done this. And so the enemy began to sow it in the garden when he said to Eve, "Indeed, has God said, you shall not eat from any tree of the garden?" Putting doubts in, that's how he gets in. He's like the virus. He's not a human being. The devil's not a human being. He's like a virus that injects this information. And now Eve begins to wrestle with this and concludes that God does not know what he's talking about all of the time. And there you have it. The fall comes in at that point. Jesus said this, "I am the door. If anyone enters through me, he shall be saved and shall go in and out and find pasture." There's another issue of trust, isn't it? You enter by the door. Well, I'm not sure. You know, there's a lot of other religions out there. And, you know, I am the door. And we have to trust that. The thief, Jesus said, comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they might have life and might have it abundantly. That's his promise. Again, an issue of trust, though. Well, in the midst of COVID, in the midst of World War III coming up here on the horizon, it was supposed to happen Wednesday. It somehow missed the mark, missed the train. On Wednesday this last week, we're told that it's, you know, we're going to get into it here soon. In the midst of all of this stuff, we can still enjoy life with our Creator. Yeah, but there's the issue of trust. We must trust him that he knows what he's doing. Death, disease, sickness, sorrow, and corruption, they weren't created by God. They were introduced into creation through the disobedience of the first humans. That's really where it came. And of course, the virus was the devil himself who injected new ideas. And that's what happens a lot. Here's an interesting cartoon. Viruses actually work together. They actually do a sense of training bacteria and things to do what they want. But here's an interesting comic here. You have much to learn, grasshopper. You see the bubonic plague there with the Ebola. You know, there are different viruses, and they all have these little bits of information. And we live in a very scary world. It is fallen, and I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but we will never, ever, ever make it better. We're going to have to learn how to trust God to get us through and to end up with a life that honors Him. That, to me, is the biggest challenge. And then, in a day to come, enjoy eternity. And those are things that I'm beginning to think a lot more about, since I'm supposed to be one of those with the great risk of dying because of these diseases that are floating around here. Wait a minute. I know that. I should know that. We live in a fallen world. So my challenge, anyway, to me personally, and I'd like to just share, that's really what I'm going through, is coming to grips with that. Yeah, do I trust the Lord each day so that I'm not enslaved to fear and to corruption and things? I think we can live like that, but it depends on what we do with our trust.